passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Come in. We have reached Tuesday and a lot happening today. Most of it involving the University of Michigan. We'll get to some of this weekend's games in a moment, but let's start with a lot of conversation about whether this cheating scandal could render Michigan out of the CFP. That's what some experts say. We're still trying to unpack exactly what is going on with Jim Harbaugh's program. And to do that, nobody better than Mark Schlabaugh, who is one of the premier investigative reporters in the country on this story as well. Mark, thank you for the time. It is Tuesday. The story is just a handful of days old. As we say hello to you, what is the latest?
Well, Paul, Pete Thamel and I reported yesterday that 11 of the Big Ten schools found records of Connor Stallions, the analyst from Michigan, purchasing tickets to their football games. Some schools, it was 9 games over a 3-year period. One school, I believe, was 5 games over a 3-year period. In most cases, some cases at least, the tickets were forwarded to other individuals. One school in the Big Ten was able to capture some video of an individual sitting in the seat that the Stallions had purchased a ticket for, and that individual was holding a cell phone the entire game and appeared to be video recording signs from the opposite sideline.
And Mark, just for those who don't know, but I would assume most do at this point, that is clearly against the NCAA rules. Am I correct?
You can steal signs in game. At least it's not illegal. You talk to some coaches who believe it's unethical, but you are not allowed under NCAA rules to advance scout at stadiums off your campus. And you're also not allowed to use electronic equipment to record signs. So it's against NCAA rules.
Okay. And that's what we know. There's a lot we don't know. And I think that's really where many are trying to figure this thing out. I realize you're just reporting on this, but in relation to the University of Michigan, and in particular Jim Harbaugh, what more do you think we need to find out?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of unknown questions at this point, Paul. What did Jim Harbaugh know? He issued a statement last week that said he wasn't aware of any illegal scouting within his program, that he had always instructed staff members and coaches to scout within the rules. I think that's the big question going forward. What did Jim Harbaugh or any of the Michigan assistant coaches know about this scheme? Were they involved? Was Connor Stallions a lone wolf, a rogue actor? I think as the NCAA gets into its investigation, we know that they've requested access to Stallions' computer. What are they going to find in his emails? A lot of the schools said that he used a personal credit card to purchase those tickets, which added up to several thousand dollars. We're talking about 45-yard line seats, several rows up, so he had a clear view of the opposite sideline. So those aren't cheap tickets for some games. Was he reimbursed for those tickets? So there's still a lot left to shake out.
And Mark, I mentioned Jim Harbaugh, but is he or is he not really the key here? As long as if Stallions handed this information over to anyone on that coaching staff and they used it, isn't it still the same?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if the head coach were involved, it could potentially be more damaging. Certainly for Harbaugh, who's already facing one accusation in a separate NCAA investigation involving improper recruiting. Under NCAA rules, the head coach has responsibility for his program. He's supposed to promote an atmosphere of compliance. Under some rewritten rules, he's responsible for the actions of his coaching staff. So certainly he would have some exposure, it would seem, regardless if he was involved intimately or not.
Mark, you've covered a number of NCAA cases over the years, and there was one. It's one thing to have covered them 5 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, and as opposed to today, because we just got through seeing another case, Kansas, which was in and out of the federal courts, which was looked really terrible for many people. And at one time, LSU coach Will Wade was involved in all that, and ultimately end up with very little penalty many, many years later. I bring that up because there seems to be some in our industry that think this could be adjudicated rather quickly. I'm not to put you in the role of an NCAA arbiter, but how could this move quickly, if assuming it could?
Yeah, I don't see how it can move quickly. I think the only way anything would happen to Michigan during this season is if the Big Ten stepped in and did something to the Wolverines out of, you know, sportsmanship-wise, or, you know, the integrity of the playing field in the league. I mean, look, I'm sure the Big Ten's got 13 really upset programs right now who believe that Michigan was illegally scouting them and stealing their signals, and, you know, that it wasn't an even playing field when they played Michigan. But you know how the NCAA operates, the enforcement staff. They move at a glacial pace. Let's say that they worked at hyper speed and got a notice of allegations to Michigan in mid-November. Michigan has 90 days to respond. That puts it at what, December, January, mid-February? The college football playoff, the Big Ten championship game have come and gone. So I'd be shocked if anything comes out. Now, down the road, a year from now, 2 years from now, which is typically how long it's going to take for it to be fully adjudicated, If Michigan were found in violation, could they have to go back and vacate some wins and forfeit some titles? You know, perhaps, but it's going to be a long time from now, and Jim Harbaugh may or may not still be the coach at Michigan.
And just your own experience to try to answer this one, Mark, you mentioned the Big Ten, and we've seen all conferences, including the SEC, that we're both very familiar with, have issues like this. I remember, as you do, Cam Newton. A couple mm-hmm. of years ago, and I'll try not to answer the question while I'm asking it, but what is the likelihood that the Big Ten office decides to intervene and prohibit Michigan, regardless of their findings, of playing in the Big Ten championship game and disallowing them from competing in the CFP?
I'd be very surprised.
Mark, I've known you a long time. I would have been very surprised if your answer was anything other than you would be very surprised. Great to have you on. It's always great to catch up with Mark Schlabaugh, who has covered many of these nasty cases in the past. And his answer there may calm a few people down on social media who think this case is going to be sped up and Michigan is going to be thrown out of the CFP. We'll take a short break after we tell you that Blake Topmeyer will join us. Talking about Nick Saban should never retire. Alabama fans wholeheartedly agree with you, Blake. Ubben on the world of college sports. Marcello and Stinch will be in here talking about the weekend's games.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. As we continue, we will get to your phone calls right now. And let's start with G in Atlanta. Hello, G.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you so much.
Well, Paul, I was calling today because when I called in last Thursday, Jim called and said some great words. I mean, he was very kind, and I was very, very warm welcome to that because he don't know me from a can of paint, and I don't know him from a can of paint. And from what he said about me was great. It was encouraging. Because I do go day by day, you know, trying to live with this kidney situation I have and trying to get a kidney. And for what Jim said to me that day, I was so grateful. He made my day. And I want to tell Jim, don't let no one steal your joy, Jim, because I was like you at times. I was hot-headed. I would go after anybody that said something to me I didn't like. But I'm with the Lord now, and I don't let no one steal my joy. And I just want to pass that word, Jim, because You're a good caller. To me, you are the best, and I'm just grateful for what you said, Paul. what he said, Paul. So I just want to thank
Jim.
I'm
so glad to hear from you, Gene. I hope Jim was able to hear that. And your words resonate in all of our ears. And you be well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. You take care.
What a great line about letting other people steal your joy. Let's continue now. And Willis is in Los Angeles. So hello, Willis.
Hey, Paul, I called you about the five-star quarterback committed to Saban.
Yes, sir.
But this is a little twist on the story. Yeah. His older brother is an all-Ivy League quarterback at Penn and an honor student at the Wharton School of Finance.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
And, you know, he's really good. He's a quarterback. And he's really, you know, could do anything, but he has expressed an interest in playing Division One football. He wants to go to the NFL. And I don't know if he's going to recruit him. He's going to decide where he's going to go. But his name is Aiden Sand, and he can really play. And he's the captain of his team. He's an honors student at the Wharton School of Finance.
And, if you met him, most of you probably know that, but that is considered the premier business school in America.
It is really elite. If you met the kid, despite his age, you'd hire him as your agent. He's that cool of a guy.
I've been looking for a young agent, so give him my name.
He is. By the way, the greatest thing that could happen to USC is to get Sam Pittman as their defensive coordinator.
Well, thank you very much. Sam Pittman is considered one of the premier offensive line coaches in the country, and right now he's happy being the head coach at Arkansas, though. Hey, thank you very, very much. We had a really an emotional call a minute ago from G, who for those of you who don't know, is a young man in Atlanta who is calls us all the time, and we were first introduced because he was complaining that where he got dialysis every day, they did not have our show on. He talked to the hospital, and they ended up getting it on, and he's become one of our most beloved callers, and he mentioned Jim a minute ago. Jim, go right ahead.
I'm going to agree with everyone, and this is what the Bible says. Agree in Jesus' name, and it shall be done. I believe that. I believe we've played a lot of – I and a Christian friend of mine, Paul, have been fervently praying for some people, and I'm telling you, God's moving. His power is healing people, and we now agree – I hope you'll agree with me – that we're praying that G will be completely healed, and I believe it. It's been happening, and I believe it, and I know God's powerful, and nothing is too hard for God. And I'm gonna tell you a miracle. You talking about a small miracle? This is not even a small miracle. I just walked in, turned the TV on, and G came on the screen. Is that not amazing?
That is remarkable.
I'm telling you, it's really amazing.
Well, I was appreciative, but I was hoping you were able to hear that. And I realize you're busy.
It's the first thing that came on when I heard the sound on your show. G started talking. I said, wow. Anyway, G, God bless you, man. I want to tell you something else, Paul. I don't talk ball, but I like ball. You know, and I've talked to you behind the scenes. But anyway, the same qualities exist in Jalen Milroe. I feel he's a great kid, a great Christian. I believe that.
He seems that way, Jim. I don't know him well, but I'm very impressed.
Here's the thing, Paul. I got discernment, and I'm not bragging. If you got discernment, God can let you feel and let you sense him in people, and he's in Jalen. He's in him. You can feel it. Most people can see it and feel it. He's really a Christian, and I believe he's a perfect representative to be the quarterback, not just for the physical realm of it, not just for the athletic realm, but for the spiritual realm. And I'm so glad he is the quarterback, and he's improving every day.
Well, I think he's been great.
He's terrific. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. Really good to hear from you. Expired is up next. So hello, Expired.
Hey, Paul. I haven't been calling much because I ain't had much good to say.
No, sir.
But yesterday I was actually working, but I got to listen to Catfish call in. I think it was Catfish, the guy that says that A&M doesn't have to pay Jimbo because of state law and Supreme Court with Texas Tech and all that good stuff. Well, I hate to tell him, and I mean, as a high school coach in Texas, most of us get maybe 2-year contracts as a former high school coach. head coach, you get like a 2-year contract, and a lot of times they don't like what you do, and in this state you get fired or bought out, and they have to pay you at least the rest of your contract in Texas public schools. Now, if it's over X amount of years, they don't have to. I don't know the exact amount, but I know if you have a 2-year contract and they get rid of you,
now, we pretty well shot him down. I didn't want to embarrass him, but he completely misunderstood the situation.
Yeah,
he was confusing the Leach case, where Leach was fired for cause and he had to file suit. Jimbo would not be fired for cause.
No, Jimbo's not going to get fired for cause. I mean, we're not winning, and that's what it matters. I mean, you can be in Michigan right now and be spying on everybody, but as long as you're winning, you're going to keep your job. Jimbo has done a really good job of our kids play hard. We just don't win. I don't know what it is. We don't win, Paul, and I wish I could figure it out, but he's not going to be fired for cause, but he's probably going to be fired sooner or later if we don't start winning, and that's just the way it is, and that's the SEC. But anyway, it's good to hear from you, Paul. Glad to hear Jim. He seemed like in good spirits. I don't like him, but glad he's in good spirits. Have a great day, G. God bless you.
Thank you very much, Expired. Really good to hear from you. And what about James in Alabama?
Paul, how are you?
James, doing well. Thank you.
Is someone trying to steal your joy?
Nobody's trying to steal my joy today. Yesterday, okay. Maybe, but not today.
Tell me something. How many former head coaches does Auburn currently have on the payroll that are not working at Auburn?
I think only two.
And those are?
I would think it would be Malzahn and Harsin.
Okay. Now, tell me something. The problem they have over there now, can we put a date on it? When did it start?
What problem are you referring to?
Well, we've lost 4 SEC football games this year. Isn't that correct?
I really lost track, but I think that sounds right.
Shouldn't they have won one of those, Paul? Is there one of those on that list that they should have won or could have won?
Let's see. I'll go over that list right now. Texas A&M, no, I don't think they should have won that game. Georgia, I don't think they should have won that game. LSU, no. And Ole Miss, I don't frankly think they should have won any of the games based on
okay, this one coming
on
up Saturday.
Side.
This one coming up Saturday.
Yeah, this one they should win. They should absolutely win this one.
Okay. Are there any more on the horizon that they should win?
Yeah, or I would say Vanderbilt, Arkansas. Auburn should win 3 SEC games this year.
Okay, 3. What happens if they lose all 3 of those?
They lose all 3.
Should we be concerned about our head coach?
I don't know why. I mean, who thought this was going to be a great year? I thought it might be a decent year where he could maybe upset somebody along the way, maybe win the road game against Arkansas, maybe split a game, maybe steal a game at home. But I think any realistic football person knew this was going to be maybe a 6-win season, maybe 7 at the most. I never thought it could be anywhere above that.
Okay.
I do think when the season's over, there should be some serious changes made, and I think everyone who's an Auburn fan knows where the first change will be.
Okay, help me understand that. Besides
Bobby,
the portal,
are you an Auburn fan, James?
Oh yeah, I'm.
Well, if you're an Auburn fan and you don't know where the first change should be, then you're really not an Auburn fan.
Well, excuse me. Gee, you have a nice day. And Paul, I appreciate you straightening me out on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to straighten you out. I'm just, I think for those who follow Auburn as opposed to call every couple of months and act like they're an Auburn fan, it's pretty obvious the deficiency in this coaching staff. But that's just an opinion from, I don't know, about 600 miles away. Pat is up next. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul. Thanks. Nobody's going to steal my joy this week. It's my favorite football week of the entire year. It's the cocktail party.
Really? That's your favorite week?
That is the cocktail party.
Okay.
Barry and I have been going there since 1968, and I think we've seen it all, Paul. I really do.
If I've been going someplace that long, it would probably be my favorite week of the year, too.
Absolutely. Like Kirby says, we're staying in the moment and taking it one moment at a time, and we'll just see what happens. You know my background, and you know my loyalties. I'm getting the feeling, getting into this season, that maybe the SEC is not quite as good as it has been in the past, and maybe some of the other.
Well, there's a reason for that, though, and it's really pretty simple. It's the transfer portal has leveled the playing field.
Yes, that's where I was going with that. And my other observation is it sure is sad that the last year of the Pac-12 that they play so well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not overly emotional about that, but you're right.
Okay.
It only pains me that four of the best teams are going to the Big Ten.
Well, okay. Why does that pain you?
Because I think the Big Ten should be extinct. They shouldn't have any right to exist.
Okay. Extinct?
Yeah. There's no meaningful reason why the Big Ten should play football. Do you think, Randy?
No.
Well, what about the ACC?
They're okay. They don't bother me.
Okay.
They're like your little brother. Yeah,
we're big Florida State fans because our two grandsons are big Florida State fans, and they're Georgia fans. So we're watching out for Florida State this year, and I hope you have a good time in Jacksonville, Paul.
Well, thank you very much. It's really great to hear from you. We take a break. More to come. More guests right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Let's get back to our calls here, and Brandon is up next in Missouri. Hello, Brandon.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell D to keep his head up and keep fighting.
Well, thank you for saying that. I hope he's still watching.
Yeah, I'm 50 years old from Columbia, Missouri, and had 346 surgeries. Recently lost my left leg and my right. And I just wanted to keep his head up because I beat my first round of cancer.
Well, that is, Brandon, that is quite a journey you've been on. Well, I appreciate your confidence in G and your spirit. We really enjoyed hearing that, and we wish you all only the best.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Bash is up next. Hello, Bash.
Thank you for taking my call, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that. And I just wanted to get your comments on what we witnessed this weekend and what we potentially saw a preview of the SEC championship game between Alabama and Tennessee.
Well, I don't think that's going to be the SEC championship game.
It could be, though, if Georgia loses to Ole Miss in a couple of weeks and then after that loses to Tennessee at home in Knoxville, if you're optimistic.
Well, that is true, but that's assuming that Tennessee does not lose another game. They still have games against Missouri.
Agree. They have to go perfect after this Crimson Tide loss if they want to win the rest of the games.
I have a hard time believing that Tennessee is going to make it unscathed. Hey, thanks for the call. David is in Virginia. Hello, David. David, are you there? Brian in North Carolina. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Paul. How's everything today?
Very well. Thank you.
Hey, Paul. How many teams next year, power conferences, are we going to have next year? Four? Is that right?
At the moment, it looks like four. Yeah, that's where we are going to land.
Okay. I think about Notre Dame, the only, I guess, the school that hangs their hat on not being in a conference, but maybe a good way to, when this starts, is you have four power conferences, and with Notre Dame to get in the playoffs, say they have to run the table every year, play two top 10 schools and one in the top 25 to get in the playoffs. And if that happens, one of the power and on rotation, one of the powerhouse schools have to give up their seat. What do you think about that concept?
Well, I mean, that's all great in theory. That's not how you conduct a playoff, though. You have to have a specific rule for everyone. Notre Dame, I think there was a stipulation in there that they would not get a first-round bye. But you can't start unleveling the playing field. That's simply not fair, as much as you do or don't like Notre Dame. Jason is up next. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Paul, how you doing, man? Good to talk to you again. I need to address my brother from Louisiana, Dwayne. He calls every time talking about LSU fishing a whoop Alabama. LSU is 2-10 versus Alabama the last 12 games. He need to be on his hands and knees thinking Nick Saban come to LSU, or he would still be stuck in Jerry DiNardo and Curly Holman days. That's the first thing he needs to do.
That's great.
And he need to get back on that rig. They need to put him as far as they can in that Gulf so he don't feel this ass whooping that's fixing to come. Thank you, Paul. Have a good one.
Thank you. That is great. Norman is in Arkansas. Hello, Norman.
Hi, Paul Feinbaum. How are you, sir?
Norman, we are doing well. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to let you know I enjoy your commentary and your show. And
thank you.
What is going on with Arkansas?
Well, it's a team that right now does not know how to win. And
that is true. That is true.
Clearly has already admitted he made one major blunder in bringing Dan Enos, and now he's trying to salvage his career at Arkansas.
That's true. Do you think this is his last year?
I don't know that answer yet. I think the next few weeks, I think if Arkansas can get out there and steal a couple of wins, he might slow everyone down. I don't want to give you a cliche that I'm sure some in Arkansas have offered, that who are you going to get better?
That's true.
That is part of the equation with Sam Pittman, because he really is a beloved and cherished figure, but he's got to figure this
thing
out.
Oh, yeah, he's a real likable guy,
yeah,
but
really
I think he would be better as the offensive coordinator.
He might be, but I'm willing to at least sit tight and see what he does the rest of the way.
All right, Paul. I appreciate your time, brother.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think that's always the problem when you fire that first person, you've opened the door. It's one thing if things are bad and you get to the end of the season and the AD goes, "Hey, give me a reason to think that next year will be better." And the first thing the coach says is, "Well, the first thing I'm doing is getting rid of that rascal, my offensive coordinator." Sam's already done that. There's no daylight now between Sam and the finish line. He's got to turn this thing around. Squirrel is up next.
That was a very inspirational call by G earlier, and a great call by the Virgin Jim too. I enjoyed that call. And I told you I went to Knoxville last weekend.
Yes, sir.
And it was such a great weekend. The weather was great. The leaves were beautiful. And the game couldn't have turned out better. And I got to have dinner with a bunch of different Tennessee fans Friday night, and they were so confident. And first quarter, they were confident, and their confidence built through the second quarter. They were great people, and I didn't want to rub it in or be a jerk. So I just made a few comments like, a game actually lasts four quarters, guys, things like that. And they didn't sink in until about halfway through the third quarter. But, again, it was a great – I couldn't ask for the game to turn out better. When you lived in Knoxville, did you ever go over to Cades Cove?
I sure did. What a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. It was gorgeous. You know, that little 11-mile loop that you take with your, vehicle, and it's single-lane traffic, one direction. And, there's wildlife everywhere. And the kind of rule of thumb is when you see wildlife, if you can't pull over and get off the road, you just kind of ease real slow. So, because, traffic can get really congested. Have you ever seen any bears while you were there?
I have never seen a real bear in Cades Cove, no.
I saw four of them Sunday, Paul.
Did you really?
And I got about 200 yards behind the bear jam that went around a little curve in the woods, and I didn't realize it was a bear jam. I knew it was an animal. I didn't know what. And slow, it took about 30 minutes, but slowly the traffic creeped up. And at that time on a Sunday during the fall, there was 2 miles of traffic bumper to bumper at that point. And we come around the curb, and there's a mother bear and three cubs, and people acting stupid, trying to approach the bear and everything. It was crazy. But thankfully for my Australian cattle dog, as soon as we got about 30 feet from him, he stuck his head out the window. And you know how blue heelers are. He proceeded to raise hell. And that mother and those three bears hightailed it across the pasture to another set of woods. So anybody wondering why they were stopped on Cades Cove Sunday, it was because of the bear jam. But thanks to Max, it got cleared. Thanks for taking my call. Aloha.
We stay in Tennessee with the spirit of this call. Peggy is up next.
Oh, how fitting. Paul, I called it because I thought maybe you'd been missing me.
Oh, no doubt, Peggy. I've been pining for you every night.
Oh, that tickled me. Listen, oh, how sad. He had a good time watching the Tennesseans cry. I'm still crying. Is it okay for me to come out of mourning now, or should I wear black?
I think it's time to come out of mourning. I mean, by the way, I mean, you've only beaten Alabama once in about 300 years. I wouldn't get that upset about it.
Well, because I have been checked out for about 15 years. I just couldn't take it. I mean, other than my sister naming her dog Butch, you know, I don't try not to remember nothing about that period of time. I just couldn't stand it. So I'd watch it every now and then, but I never even let it cross my mind. And here I've let myself, it's like I fell back in love with the old boyfriend. And it ain't
well, you
cheating.
Know, my experience on that, Peggy, is that's dangerous.
Yes, it's very dangerous. Because now I'm going to tell you something. Now here's the difference, pal. I remember this is where the hate for it got with Alabama. When I worked at the Open Heart, when it was on the weekends in October, just like what Squirrel's talking about, that's when we made our money. I mean, it was a gold mine, you know, back in the 80s. I made killer money. We would have the Alabama people up there, you know, when they were playing in Neyland. Mm-hmm. Honey, that place, you know, I don't know if you was ever up there, big old place, you know, upstairs and everything, and they back. And look, we made good money, but it was rough. I saw the wave, I heard the roll. I mean, it went from down in the bottom. It was like being, I experienced things most normal Tennessee fans didn't. It was like being in the bat cave. With a bunch of people saying that, and I was literally. Now, and if they lost, oh my gosh, tips was bad. People, it didn't go good. If they won, you made good money, but you went through it. So I have PTSD, and here I am back in it. But
it is great to hear from you, Peggy. We head to the break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. As we continue, let us check in with Mitch in Arkansas. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, Paul, how's it going?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I've listened to you all the time. My son and I listen to you after I pick him up from school. We love listening to your show. It's the first time I called. I just wanted to ask you. Got the keys to the ship for the Hogs. Who's your shortlist for offensive coordinators next year? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I think it's a little premature on that in the sense that I really think Sam Pittman has to establish whether what his own future looks like. But certainly someone a little more innovative and someone that will work with the material that you have, not try to push his own agenda down the throat, which I think is what we are we have been watching there. Jay is up next in D.C. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Good. Hey, listen, I'm a longtime listener, sometime caller.
Thank you.
Your show is one of the most consistent, best done things on TV, so I really enjoy it. Great thing you did earlier today for G, so really nicely done. I got 3 points to make about this weekend about Tennessee, Alabama. First, I saw what you read. I read what you said about Joe Milton. I agree, he's not a quarterback. We're not going to get any better with him as our quarterback. We're 13th in the SEC in passing. We're scoring 14 points less a game this year than last year. It was all about Hendon Hooker last year. It's not about Joe Milton. Saturday during the game, Alabama had just taken the lead 24-20. There was a timeout. The offense was huddled on the sideline getting ready to come back in the game. Coaches had them pulled together. They're talking to them. And Joe Milton's on the sideline dancing to the music of the loudspeaker. Mm. And he's not the kind of character that's going to lead the team to victory. He's just not. So just get your thoughts on when we might see Nico, because he can't be any worse than Milton. Two, I also think that these defenses have got Heupel's offenses figured out. I mean, I know you think he's an innovator, but if you look at our offensive game plan, we do the same plays over and over and over. It's either quick passage to the sideline, we throw it deep, or we run that inside trap over and over. When's the last time we pitched the ball outside? When's the last time Tennessee ran a screen play? When's the last time we threw the ball to the tight end? We just do the same thing over and over and over and over again. And the third thing I like to say is, what about Dylan Sampson? He only averages 6 yards a carry, and he scored 6 touchdowns this year. He doesn't get the ball enough. He's an explosive, dynamic player, and he didn't even play against Florida. And when they asked him why he didn't get to play against Florida, they said, we couldn't figure out how to fit him in.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.